Blog Talk Radio.
I'm not kidding when I say that whenever I'm off, the world just absolutely goes to shit. The last time, so we had to take a few days off a while ago for, you know, stuff involving the new studio. And, you know, the day I was off, we had Alton Sterling happen in Baton Rouge. Then we had Philando Castile happen. Then we had the shooting of the police officers in Dallas. So I was gone for like 2 or 3 days, and the world fell apart. I'm like, what the fuck, man? And when I'm doing the show sometimes during the week, like I can always prep to the brim, basically. But sometimes you're like, okay, let's see. You know, you go down the list of the types of stories you have. Like some of the stories are not super breaking news and, oh, my God, world-shaking event. The second I get off the air, like it, the world fucking falls apart. So we have, Jesus, there's so much to talk about today. We have an attempted coup in Turkey. What the fuck? An attempted coup of Turkey? You know, Turkey in NATO, gigantic Muslim nation, history of secularism. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right, so I'm going to kick it off with that because that's just absolutely gargantuan news. Then we have, yet again, tragedy strike, this time in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I mean, I guess Alton Sterling before, you know, Baton Rouge was feeling it after Alton Sterling. They were reeling. Well, now there were cops that were killed in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Wait until I give you all the details of that. Then we also have the 28 redacted pages in the 9/11 report. And by the way, it's actually 29, but it's been people have been saying 28 forever. So I guess we're just still saying 28, even though it's technically 29. They've been released. They've been released. And it says pretty much exactly what we thought it would say, but the news has been so massively overshadowed by the other events. But we are going to spend a lot of time on it, and I am going to give you all of the details of it. And then forget it. Update on the terror attack in Nice, France. We got Hillary Clinton doing some fake progressive pivoting. Oh, God, and everybody's fallen for it. I mean, the only people who haven't fallen for it are the people who listen to Secular Talk and have heard me talk about this particular issue before. So we're going to talk about all that, and we're going to talk about much more. I mean, today there is a 0% chance I get through all of the stories that I have prepped for you. So without further ado, let's get started here. And the Turkey coup is top of the list for understandable reasons. All right, let's do it. On Friday night, we had an attempted military coup of the government in Turkey. This is huge news. I mean, this is gigantic because Turkey, of course, is in NATO. It's one of the most democratic and secular countries in the Muslim world. It has a history, actually, of secularism. And it was kind of the go-to example of, well, see, democracy can work in the Muslim world. Look at what's, look at Turkey. You know, Turkey was the Western ally, somewhat success story for a very, very long time. But recently, this secular streak and this secular history has been chipped away at. So the coup ended up failing. Now, the president, of course, is Tayyip Erdogan. We've spoken about him before on multiple different occasions. He was on a plane when they stormed the palace. So members of the military stormed the palace. There was gunfire at the palace, at the presidential palace, there were also various buildings that were bombed as well. So this was serious. And in the streets, you had firefights between factions of the military who were doing the coup. And it wasn't like, you know, a minuscule percentage of them or like the tiniest minority of them. It was a decent number of people in the military who were doing it. Now, not all aspects of the military were behind it. So I think the Navy was not in on it, and aspects of the Air Force were not in on it, but others were. And you had fights between the military and the police in the street. The police being loyal to Tayyip Erdogan, the president, and the military trying to overthrow Erdogan. So at the end of the night, it was a disaster because 290 people, at least 290 people were killed. Initially, there were reports of minimum 42 people being killed, but last night when I was doing the research for the show, I came across the number from CNN, 290 people, at least 290 people were killed. That's people on both sides of this, people in the military, people on the side of Erdogan and the police, I guess you can say. But now, I mean, it's already a nightmare just so far in the story. But the nightmare really, really begins after the failed attempt, because CNN reports thousands of soldiers have been arrested and hundreds of judiciary members removed since Friday's uprising. Around 6,000 people have been detained, and arrests will continue, according to Turkey's foreign ministry. So according to Zero Hedge, Erdogan has already purged 2,745 judges and prosecutors. So again, for those of you who haven't been following Turkey very closely, or you don't recall the various Secular Talk segments that we've done on Erdogan, Erdogan is deeply authoritarian, he's deeply theocratic, and there are stories of him, for example, getting people locked up because they dared make fun of him on social media. One person compared him to Gollum from Lord of the Rings. That person is now locked up. There's a story of a wife who turned the channel every time Erdogan came on in their home. The husband loves Erdogan, snitched on the wife. The wife they arrested, and they were, you know, trying to crack down on her. He's a bad dude. He's a bad dude. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you should overthrow him in a military coup. But the bottom line is, now that the military coup failed, you can bet your bottom dollar that he's going to become more authoritarian and more theocratic. So he was already trying to entrench powers with himself as a unitary executive leader. Right now in Turkey, it's not supposed to be that the president has the power. It's not a system like the United States. It's supposed to be that the prime minister has the power. So when Erdogan was prime minister, because he was, all of a sudden he had all the power. Because that's what he's supposed to be. Right, prime minister has power. Prime minister has power. So, but when he left there and he became president, president is supposed to be a symbolic role in Turkey. All of a sudden, no, look at that. Now the president has all the power. He's trying to give himself all the power. He tried to make constitutional changes recently to, like, legitimately just give him all the power. And it failed. It failed. But then there was this coup attempt. And then now I guarantee you he's going to use this to say, well, I mean, look, if you're against me having all the power now, I guess you're a traitor to your country, and I can purge you, and I can lock you up, and you can be a political prisoner. Dude, over 6,000 people already arrested? And by the way, like, don't get it twisted. This idea that, like, no, Erdogan really knows who was behind the coup. No, he doesn't. He's just taking every single person who he ever had a beef with, who he wanted to purge, and he's purging them, and he's using the attempted coup as an excuse to purge them. So when the coup failed, Erdogan gave a press conference, and he said this. Oh, I saw this live, and it gave me chills. He said, "The uprising is a gift from God to us because it will help us clean the military." We're in trouble. According to CNN, quote, Erdogan also said he did not rule out bringing back the death penalty for the coup's perpetrators. As a crowd chanted, "We want the death penalty," he said, and I quote, "We can't ignore the people's request in a democracy. This is your right." Oh, this is getting worse and worse. So the story also gets weirder because every major political party, including the HDP, was opposed to the coup. So that made a lot of people go, hmm. And it also got widespread praise, to be clear, because, you know, people are making the argument, well, it's good if your country gets past the point where a coup is like, well, this is the preferred course of action, and this is will keep stability. Obviously, people would rather have elections, and that is, the system's obviously more pure, and the process works better if you just go through elections and stuff. But every single major political party was like, well, we denounce this, and basically, you know, we're not behind this. So it's still not entirely clear who even did the coup. And this is where, you know, I have been disheartened by looking on social media and seeing people come out hard in favor for it or against it and, like, just kind of only giving one side of it, because there's a chance that the coup was staged by what people are calling Gulenists. So there's this religious leader who Erdogan used to be close with that had a falling out a while back. This religious leader is now exiled in the United States. He lives in Pennsylvania. He set up a bunch of charter schools, some Islamic schools. And if indeed the coup was staged by Gulenists, and by the way, Erdogan is totally convinced that it's from Gulenists because he's yelling at the U.S. to, you have to deport him. If you're a good ally, you'll get, bring him back to us. Give him back to us to face justice. So he's convinced of it. I'm not really totally convinced of it. But if indeed it was Gulenists who tried to overthrow him, then if you're a secularist or a liberal and you want to support that coup, that really doesn't make sense because Gulenists are arguably right of Erdogan. How is that even possible? I know, right? How is that possible? Erdogan's fucking a crazy theocratic maniac. He's been funding Islamists and jihadists in Syria because he wants to topple Assad that badly. So, but how is it possible? Well, I don't know. From everything I've read about Gulen so far, it appears like he would perhaps be even more authoritarian than Erdogan. He would perhaps be more theocratic than Erdogan. Perhaps it's not something that you should support if indeed it was these Gulenists who were trying to overthrow it. Now, but it's also possible that it was secularists who tried to overthrow him, basically liberal secularists. And small d Democrats who fear that Turkey has already gone fully authoritarian, which there is an argument to make in that direction, and they wanted to oust him and basically have new elections. Because you have to understand, and I didn't know this until, you know, reading about it after the coup attempt, but apparently in Turkey, it's not, like, this has happened a few other times before. I think once in the 1980s and once in the 1960s or something like that. And the idea in Turkey, the way the system's set up, the president is not the commander-in-chief. And historically, in Turkey's history, people have had more loyalty to the military than they do to any given government. And it's written in the Turkish constitution that the military is supposed to uphold secularism and democracy. So if they see a threat to Turkey's secular history and democratic history, well, then, I mean, I guess the argument has been in the past that it indeed is actually more democratic to do the coup, have this brief interim period, and then you just have new elections. If it's the case that, you know, that was the direction they were going in, well, then it's like, you know, I'm not necessarily for the coup in that respect, but then I get it more. There's a better argument for it than if it's even further right-wing Gulenists. But look, at this point, I really don't know where I fall overall because I still don't know if it was Gulenists or if it was secularists, and I think that matters. But then also, I don't know if it really is the case that, you know, for example, if Erdogan had lost the next election, that he still would have found a way to do a power grab and stay in power. You know what I mean? So in other words, maybe it was still possible for him to lose via elections. Now, there were credible stories of election fuckery from AKP, which is Erdogan's party behind the scenes, in one of the recent elections. But I don't know. He won one of the elections with like 50-some-odd percent, which is not the hallmark of somebody who really did steal an election. Usually when somebody steals an election, you know, 98%, 90%, like this is what you see historically when somebody becomes a full out-and-out dictator because they want to fake overwhelming support so they make people feel in the country like if they disagree with the leader, well, you're the only one. So nobody speaks up against them. So it's this weird trick that authoritarian leaders do. So it's a messy situation because you could say, hey, Erdogan's authoritarian, Erdogan's theocratic, for the sake of Turkey, you got to overthrow him and it's got to succeed. You can make that argument. But then on the flip side, you could also make the argument, well, it depends who's doing the coup, and It's also the case, keep it real, that you're saying this authoritarianism is so wrong and so bad that I will out-authoritarian the authoritarian, and therefore I'm better? Well, no, you just did authoritarianism to fight authoritarianism. I don't know. That's a little bit of a contradiction there. So, look, again, I don't know where I fall because I don't even know who necessarily did it. The articles are not clear on that. Erdogan's convinced it's Gulenists. I've heard from people on Twitter who know the situation even better than I do, whether they're Turkish, they're on the ground, what have you. And they're like, no, this was a real attempt at to overthrow them and have a real secular democracy again. So I don't know. I genuinely don't know. You guys know I like to come out here and have strong opinions on shit, but I'm telling you, I really don't know the reality to it. All right, so from here on out, it is going to be a messy, dangerous, scary time in Turkey. I mean, it's already been scary for a while because Erdogan's a mess. He is authoritarian. He is a strong man. He is theocratic. Like I said, he's been in bed with the wrong people in Syria, Islamists and jihadists. You have Turkey recently was attacked by ISIS, but then also there are instances where they get attacked by the PKK. So, you know, they're between a rock and a hard place, man. To me, it looks like now, because of how everything unfolded, there is no winning. There is no winning. Either you get Erdogan and he gets more authoritarian and more theocratic. That would be a disaster. Turkey just straight drove off a cliff. Or, let's say the coup had succeeded. Well, you just had a military coup, and who knows what happens in the wake of a military coup, especially in this political climate that we have right now and the destruction and the craziness happening all around the world. It was a real possibility that if you overthrew Erdogan, you end up getting somebody worse, in which case, by definition, that is worse. So it's like there's no good options. And Turkey is a super important country, the second biggest army in NATO. You know, the U.S. has bases there strategically to do for stuff in Iraq and I think Syria. And there's also, you know, interesting conspiracy theories going on now, too, about, well, maybe Erdogan staged it against himself so that he couldn't, you know, take all the power and really become a unitary executive, go full authoritarian, so he staged it against himself. I don't know if I believe that. I really don't. And then also there's the other Alex Jonesy theory that I was riffing on the other night, which is the same day that this happened, John Kerry and Vladimir Putin had a meeting in Russia, and they were talking about Syria. Now, for those of you who don't know, there's huge differences between the U.S. and Russia on Syria, but they're talking it out. So Russia obviously backs the Assad government. That's their ally. And they're fighting the rebels, who at this point are mainly Islamists and jihadists. I mean, I'm sure there's some moderate rebels left, but the overwhelming majority at this point are just bad people. Jihadists, Islamists, al-Nusra Front, which is al-Qaeda, ISIS. So it may have been the case that the U.S. finally came around and said, you know what, as bad as Assad is, and as much as he's not our ally, he's Russia's ally, and he's Iran's ally, terrible as he is, as much as we've spoken out against him, he's the only thing standing between Syria staying Syria or becoming al-Qaeda-stan. So, okay, Russia, you got it. Let's make a deal and let's work together to try to defeat the Islamists and jihadist rebels. Now, there is no reports that that was the conclusion they reached and that they have a deal on that. But it's interesting that they're having peace talks about this and trying to come to some sort of reasonable agreement on Syria, and then Erdogan gets overthrown. Now, why is that interesting? Because Erdogan is not entertaining the conversation of, hey, maybe Assad should stay in there, or there should be an interim government, or, you know, you should transition to a more, you know, Sunni Shia mixed government. Like, he is incredibly anti-Assad, so if he stays in power and Russia and the U.S. had agreed to keep Assad there, well, then there's no telling what Erdogan would do, because he's a loose cannon. He might go balls to the wall and not only arm the Islamists and jihadists, as he's been doing in Syria, he might send the fucking Turkish army in there. Well, now we know that they're not really on his side, some aspects of the military. But the problem is you can't have an agreement between NATO and Russia on Syria and try to get peace when the second biggest army in NATO and a major country in the region is against your deal. So the idea may have been, hey, if we get rid of him and we put Gulen in power, maybe Gulen will roll with this. So I don't know. Again, I'm just talking shit here, and I'm just giving my Alex Jonesy theory. But either way, it's a weird situation, it's a scary situation, and man, do I feel for everybody in Turkey and what they're going through right now. If you're in Turkey and you're a liberal, you're a secularist, you know, you've already experienced quite a bit of oppression, a hell of a lot worse, and my heart is with you, and I don't know how there's a way to remedy this situation in a way that works in the long run. I really don't. So just be safe there. Just be safe. Okay. That was a fucking long segment, man. And that's not, like, that's one segment, and we're just getting started on, like, the biggest news. So we had Turkey, and now we're going to scoot right on over to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And actually, I got a clip for this later on. We had disaster strike again in Baton Rouge, Louisiana yesterday. Huffington Post reports here. 3 Baton Rouge, Louisiana officers were killed and another 3 were injured Sunday while responding to a shooting in the city. 2 of the dead were identified as Baton Rouge police officers and 1 is an East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's deputy. WAFB identified officers Montrell Jackson, 32 years old, and Matthew Gerald, 41 years old, as 2 of the slain officers. The 3rd officer has been identified as Brad Garofalo, 45 years old. They continue here with some of the specifics of the attack. Just before 9 a.m., a call came in to police about a man walking around with an assault weapon. Witness Brady Vansell told WAFB that he saw 2 people shooting at each other before authorities even arrived. He said, quote, "There was multiple gunshots going back and forth and back and forth before any police ever showed up. This was not a come-at-police situation. They weren't targeting police at first. I don't assume so because there were men out here shooting at each other in an empty parking lot until the police showed up, and then it turned into a gun battle. I'm guessing to try to get themselves free or get out of the situation." Okay, now that was what one witness saw at the time on the scene, but as it turns out, that's false, because it was likely a trap set up by the shooters. So some haven't been caught, but one of them ended up dying in a shootout with the cops. And Mediaite explains here on that. Gavin Eugene Long has been confirmed as the gunman behind Sunday's attack in Louisiana. This guy praised Mika Johnson, who recently murdered cops in Dallas, on social media. Reports have indicated that Long belonged to several anti-government groups, including the New Freedom Group and the Sovereign Citizens. CBS has also reported that Long spent time in the Marines working as a data network specialist. He received an honorable discharge in 2010. Okay. So, I'm skeptical of the New Freedom Group and Sovereign Citizens claim. So, they're saying, and for those of you who don't know Sovereign Citizens, I've spoken about them probably way more than anybody else. They're a right-wing terrorist group, basically. They don't view even state governments as legitimate, but definitely the federal government they don't view as legitimate. They view the sheriff as the highest authority that they'll listen to. They want to pay any taxes, so it's this extremist right-wing group, and there have been some terrorist attacks done by Sovereign Citizens. I'm skeptical in this case of whether or not he was actually part of Sovereign Citizens. In fact, we're going to get to some direct comments from him in a little bit, and he goes more into associations and whatnot. He had a YouTube account, and I fished through it last night, and here are some of those disturbing comments that he made.
And this is very important. I wanted to let y'all know, because if anything happened with me, because I'm an alpha male, I stand up, I stand firm, and I stand for mine till the end, to the last day on this, in this flesh. But I'm not the flesh. I'm not the body. I have a body. But I just want to let y'all know, don't affiliate me with nothing. I'm not affiliated with the Black Business School. Even though I might promote their business or something like that, or any of my friends, any of my associations, those are just associations. I'm not affiliated with it. Yeah, I was also a Nation of Islam member. I'm not affiliated with it. Don't affiliate me with the money team. Something happened, they'd be like, well, yeah, we with Floyd Mayweather. No, don't affiliate me with nothing. Black Business School, I was a Christian. I was in Africa. Don't try to say, oh, he was Africa, he was this and that. No, they'll try to put you with ISIS or some other terrorist group or anything. No, I'm affiliated with the spirit of justice. Nothing else. Nothing more, nothing less. And I just want to get this message to my people out there. With all the stuff that's going on right now, this is my message to you. Don't get emotional about it. What I mean is, the emotions that, you know, come up when stuff happens, don't start to then want to change stuff, making emotional decisions. Because when you make emotional, when you make decisions that are based off emotion, when that emotion dies, then that fuel dies. That energy for that decision. You get what I'm saying? So that's why you base your decisions off logic. So when the emotion dies, you still got your energy. You see, because your decisions are based off logic. They're getting fueled by your logic. Let's just go with the numbers. Let's go with the history. 100% of revolutions of victims fighting their oppressors, from victims fighting their bullies, 100% have been successful through fighting back, through bloodshed. Zero have been successful just over simply protesting. It doesn't, it has never worked and it never will.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Tell that to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who, of course, got the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act as a result of his peaceful civil disobedience. All the civil rights workers. I don't mean to just give credit to MLK. I mean to give credit to all the civil rights fighters and activists who peacefully got change in the country. Tell that to Gandhi. How did nonviolence work out for Gandhi? Hey, by the way, Gandhi's even way more liberal than me. Like, Gandhi is a straight-up pacifist. I am indeed not a pacifist. I do believe in violence for self-defense. Gandhi was like, no, even then, if you use violence, you're losing the moral high ground. You got to be nonviolent across the board. It has never worked. Oh, really? It has never worked. Well, how did that work out? How did it work out with Gandhi? Oh, that's right. It was a massive, massive, massive success story. Defeated the British Empire by being a pacifist. And, I don't know, ask Nelson Mandela how that worked out. There are actually plenty of instances, plenty of modern instances of nonviolent peaceful resistance getting change in the country. But this guy was blinded by hatred, and he said, no. I'm going to be violent. 100% of revolutions have been won through bloodshed. What fucking revolution are you talking about? What revolution are you talking about? What are you trying to fight? Who are you trying to fight independence from? What nation are you trying to set up? What are your goals? Tell me what your fucking goals are. You don't have any fucking goals. You hate all cops. By the way, I looked through his videos. As my brain melted as I listened to all of his bullshit, he hated all cops. He was very clearly a racist, and he hated all white people. He said stuff like, "I'll never go to a cracker business because the fucking Indians and Arabs, they don't give a fuck about me. I don't give a fuck about any of them." And blah 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 blah. So he thinks all white people are guilty for the sins of some white people. He thinks all cops are guilty for the sins of some cops. And let's call it what it is, man. This is bigotry 101. I mean, how can it possibly be that we rightly make the argument to police officers, hey, now, come on, don't view all black people as collectively guilty when there is a black person who is a criminal. Don't do collective punishment because that's stupid and that makes you a bigot by definition. All of them are guilty because some of them may be criminal. That's how a stupid person thinks. That's sloppy, disgusting, grotesque thinking. But this guy's doing the exact same thing against white people and cops. The exact same thing. He praised the cop murderer from Dallas. He really views this as some sort of revolution. And by the way, this is not to say, oh my God, there are no issues that need to be addressed. That's what the idiotic right-wingers say. Okay? I'm not one of them. So in other words, I fully understand that there are real problems and that black people are over-policed and white people and black people do drugs at similar rates and black people get arrested for it four times more often and police are more likely to use violence when it's a black person versus a white person. But see, there are real solutions and answers to that. Campaign Zero lays them out in great detail. For example, body cameras. If we get a federal law that says body cameras on all police officers, police brutality will drop tremendously. How do I know that? They've studied it. When cops have body cameras on them, they're much less likely to do anything up front that is questionable. So they're more likely to mind their manners when they know they're fucking being recorded. It's not foolproof, but it helps a lot. And the list goes on and on. You know, we can sit here and go all day about substantive police reform, redoing the training so that they know more about de-escalation tactics, for example. But, see, this guy's not interested in solutions because he's just blinded by his bigotry, and he wants to fight a non-existent revolution to set up a non-existent country, and he views it, he goes on at a different point to compare it to the American Revolution. You're going to compare it to the U.S. Revolution, but wait a second, are you trying to declare independence from the United States? So do you want to set up a separate black nation? Or do you want to stay within the United States but have systemic reform to make it so that black people are in every way, shape, and form treated equally to white citizens? What are you looking for? What's your answer? What's your solution? What are you going after? And the part that got under my skin the most is he kept talking about justice. The spirit of justice! That's what I care about. And don't be emotional. Be logical. Because, you know, murdering innocent people. Logic. No, don't fucking come around here talking about justice. You had no interest in justice whatsoever. In fact, one of the officers that he killed, in the aftermath of Alton Sterling's death, Officer Montrell Jackson took to Twitter, and he said this: "I swear to God I love this city, but I wonder if this city loves me. In uniform, I get nasty, hateful looks, and out of uniform, some will consider me a threat. This city must and will get better. I'm working in these streets, so any protesters, officers, friends, family, or whoever, if you see me and need a hug or want to say a prayer, I got you." This was a guy who was a good cop fighting for the right thing. He said, "Look, I know what it's like, man. I'm a black man in America. When I don't have my uniform on, I get the look sometimes. I know what it's like. But I also know all cops aren't bad people. I also know that while we need some policy changes, that doesn't mean that you should be a bigot and say all cops are bad or all white people are bad. That doesn't make any sense." So this is a guy who truly embraced reforming the police department. He truly embraced love. He's saying, "Protesters, I got you. I'm going to try to make this city better. That's what I'm about. I'm a good cop on the street here, by the way, protecting black lives." The irony of this: oh my God, we got to get back, we got to shoot him because, you know, the Baton Rouge Police Department, somebody in the Baton Rouge Police Department killed Alton Sterling, which, by the way, I did segments on. I was against it. That was an unnecessary use of force, okay? But this person thinks, oh, well, then that gives me a green light to kill any and all officers in the Baton Rouge Police Department, and that's justice. Even though the other officers didn't do it, and even though they're fighting to make the world a better place. Now, finally, I'm going to leave you with this. This is a specific picture here of Montrell Jackson. Look. Is that your enemy? This is an officer with his baby. And he spoke about how he loves the city, he loves the protesters, he loves other officers, and he's trying to make the world a better place. And you have the nerve to talk about how you're trying to do justice and you're trying to be logical? No, you're doing injustice. And you're not being logical, you're being emotional, and you're being a fucking bigot. All cops are not the problem. All white people are not the problem. Do we have real problems with police departments? Sure. And I just spoke about them before, and I'll keep speaking about it, man, because we do need systemic reform in many respects. You know, so yeah, we can address those issues policy-wise and have rational ends, while at the same time not embracing monumentally stupid and immoral bigotry. And that's what this guy was. He was a bigot. Hates all cops, hates all white people, as he made clear in his other videos. You guys can go check him out for yourself. And this is not the way forward, man. This is not the way forward. So not only do we need justice for people who are the victims of police brutality, as I often talk about, we also need justice for the officers who are victims. Because that is a thing. There is such a thing as officers being victims. And I want everybody to know I'm on the side of humanity. I'm actually going to stand up for justice. So when there are innocent black people being gunned down,
we're going to stand up and we're going to fight on their behalf and we're going to try to get justice. When there are innocent cops being gunned down, we're going to stand up and we're going to fight on their behalf and we're going to try to get justice. Because we actually care about morality and we're not just playing for a side. Okay. I got to keep going here. I got so much shit to get to.
The famous 28 redacted pages in the 9/11 report have finally been released, and it pretty much says what we thought it said. So Benjamin Norton reports here, while in the United States, some of the September 11th hijackers were in contact with and received support or assistance from individuals who may be connected to the Saudi government, states the previously redacted portion of the 2002 Joint Congressional Inquiry into the 9/11 attacks. FBI and CIA documents disclose that while some of the September 11th hijackers were in the U.S., they likely had contact with Saudi intelligence officers, the pages reveal. The declassified document also shows that the intelligence community had information, quote, indicating that individuals associated with the Saudi government in the United States may have other ties to Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. Allow me to say www.duh.net. I had to throw a net in there. I've done .com a bunch of times. I've done .org. Got to throw a net in there every once in a while. Yeah. We've been saying this all along. Others have been saying it all along. It wasn't, at this point, it wasn't really a secret. It was just, when is the U.S. government going to fucking admit it? Because when the U.S. government admits it, I mean, if you're being logical and if you actually give a shit about the people in your country who were massacred, what are you going to do? You have to do something once you admit the problem, right? And they're admitting it. Okay, yeah. That people over there who we think are our top allies and blah, 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 blah. Kind of guilty. Now, by the way, it's not like official Saudi government policy, but they're saying that individuals within the Saudi government, yes, funded people, fund Al-Qaeda probably to this day, made plans for them, so on and so forth. So that's my next question, is to the U.S. government, now that we know this, now that you admitted this, now that it's not just people outside of the government saying that we know you know, now that you're admitting, okay, you got us, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I mean, think about the fact that the Bush administration spent years trying to build up, oh my God, Saddam Hussein, the biggest threat ever to the West. Now, he was a threat to his own people. He was not a threat to the West. This guy in his ragtag country is going to what? Defeat the largest, most powerful military in human history? That's what he's going to do? He knows he'd get obliterated in 2 seconds. We have fucking nukes. We could destroy his whole country like that. So, no, he wasn't a threat to the West. But the neocons have tried to build it up. Oh, my God, such a threat. He was responsible for 9-11. He was responsible for 9-11. Total bullshit. He wasn't. He wasn't responsible for 9-11. Well, now they're saying elements, factions within the Saudi government, yes, responsible for 9/11. And what's the response from the U.S.? What are you going to do? Crickets. I don't fucking hear anything. Because they don't want to do anything. Why? Business overrides everything. As usual, overrides everything. The status quo. It overrides all. So, hey, we got a good thing going with them with weapons. You know, they give us money. We give them a metric fuck ton of weapons that they use to slaughter civilians in Yemen. Rock on. We got an oil deal going. This is sweet, man. So, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We got to be in bed with our enemy because business as usual runs the world. Well, no. How about no? How about now that we know that, I mean, it would be borderline treasonous not to do something. Now, I'm not like the idiot right-wingers, so I'm not saying you invade Saudi Arabia. That would be a horrible idea. A terrible idea. I mean, seriously, really, really bad idea. But should there be economic consequences? Should we try to untangle our super-duper-duper tight relationship with them and do a realignment of sorts? If you say no to that, you are the biggest appeaser maybe ever. Let me give you some more facts on this so you see just how big of a problem this is. Quote, the Western-backed Saudi regime has also spent an estimated $100 billion in the past few decades exporting its extremist interpretation of Islam throughout the world, infusing its fundamentalist ideology in its ostensible charity work, funding madrasas, mosques, and other institutions, poor Muslim communities. Despite this, the Saudi regime remains a close U.S. ally. In the past several years, the Obama administration has done more than $100 billion in arms deals with Saudi Arabia. We are building up our biggest enemy. Look, don't get it twisted. There's a lot of debate between liberals and conservatives about, well, what term should we use? I like radical Islamic terrorism. Oh, no, I think that's too strong. We should say jihadists. Look, that's all irrelevant to me. You can call it whatever the fuck you want to call it. Bottom line is, whatever it is, we are arming it. And we're supporting it. And we're propping it up. And then we know that they're spreading it all around the world. Did you know that with the Syrian refugee crisis, what was Saudi Arabia's response? Yeah, we're not going to take anybody, so fuck off. But here's what we will do, because we're so kind. We'll pay for new mosques in Europe. Send the refugees to Europe, and we'll build these mosques. What mosques are they building, by the way? Are they building lovely Sufi mosques where they talk about peace and enlightenment and mysticism? No. Are they building Ahmadi mosques where they talk about how, you know, the best interpretation of Islam is to be super kind to poor people and to love one another? No, they ain't building those kinds of mosques. They're building Wahhabi mosques. So they're building the same ideology that ISIS has, the same fundamentalist, extreme, ultra-conservative interpretation of Islam, literalist Islam. These are the mosques they're building. And what do? Let's keep doing business deals with them. Let's keep giving them weapons as they massacre children in Yemen. Over 50% of the people they killed in Yemen are civilians. They bomb mosques, schools, hospitals, everything. It's not a question. If you're serious about fighting terror, about defeating radical Islam, number one, untie relationship with Saudi Arabia. It's not an if. It's not a question mark. It's not a hard one to figure out. That's thing number one. Let's wake up here. Let's wake up. Now the U.S. government admits, yeah, it's not official Saudi policy, but it's aspects of the Saudi government. Of course, they're the extremists. They funded the 9/11 terrorists. They fund Al-Qaeda. That seems like a problem to me. We might want to do something about that. And for everybody who would think, no, just look at Saudi Arabia's government and how they function today. Like, what, you think all of a sudden they're going to be moral in other areas when they declare all atheists are terrorists, when they behead people? Like, that's a thing. That's like, oh, your punishment is beheading. They kill people for drug smuggling and apostasy and sorcery and witchcraft. Those aren't even fucking things, but they kill people for it. That government, on the other hand, they're wonderful. They're lovely, which is why we put them on the UN Human Rights Panel. Way to undermine all the good work the UN has ever done in one fell swoop. So if the U.S. doesn't do something now to try to untangle the relationship or do economic consequences, we're just going to ride this bitch into the rocks. Keep the status quo as it is until we hit the rocks and this whole civilization thing comes crumbling down. Okay. I'm still not done with, like, the big breaking news yet. All this stuff is fucking breaking news, dude. All of it. All of it. All right, now we go to Nice, France. I'm actually jotting something down real quick. Okay. We have some more information here on the terrorist that killed over 80 people in Nice, France. Reuters reports, Mohamed Bilal spent years seeing psychologists before leaving Tunisia for France in 2005, his sister said. Quote, my brother had psychological problems, and we have given the police documents showing that he had been seeing psychologists for several years. Bilal's father told French television that the family had sought medical treatment after his son had a breakdown. Quote, we had psychologists or psychological problems that he had psychological problems that caused a nervous breakdown. He would become angry, shout, break everything around him. We had to take him to the doctor. Former neighbors and relatives there expressed shock at the niece attack, describing Bilal as sporty, uninterested in religion, and from a regular family. People close to Bilal said he ate pork and drank alcohol, behavior that would be unlikely in a devout Muslim. So now, at this point is where many people would stop their analysis and they would say, well, okay, so this isn't terrorism because there wasn't a political or religious ideology behind it. It's just a crazy person who snapped and he went, you know, he did what he did. Now, I don't fault those people for thinking that, because that's a reasonable interpretation based on the evidence. But now we turn to CNN, and I give you more information, and then I'll tell you the entire picture here. They say, a phone number belonging to Bilal cropped up in a counterterrorism investigation into an associate of Omar Diaby, a 41-year-old Senegalese jihadi who lived in Nice before traveling to Syria. Diaby, who calls himself Omar Amsen, commands a French jihadi battalion in Syria affiliated with Jabhat al-Nusra, al-Qaeda's branch in Syria. So, has connections to al-Nusra. Furthermore, you want to talk about this, you know, thing that people have been referring to recently, self-radicalization, if you will. You go on the internet, you just find the sites that you could be attracted to in that respect, and then eventually you start believing the nonsense. So there's more evidence that this guy indeed was a avid watcher of ISIS propaganda videos, and he would watch beheading videos, for example. So this is actually a profile that counterterrorism officials see often. What you have is, generally speaking, obviously on the edges it might change in one direction or the other, but you have somebody who's kind of psychologically unstable, maybe mentally ill a little bit, and this isn't to mean all mentally ill people, of course, because not all mentally ill people are violent, so let me just be clear about that, but, you know, a little off. Just a little off, a little impressionable, a little naive, a little quick to follow people, fall in line, and stuff like that. You have somebody who's like that, and may in this case, this guy might also have just been a flat-out psychopath. So you have that mixed with a background that, you know, is filled with debauchery and just kind of not even – that's a strong word. Just being a normal person. Hey, you eat pork, you drink, you know, like women and sex and this and that. So you engage in all that stuff, and then you stumble across this fundamentalist religious message, and they tell you, no, 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 no. All that stuff you did, that's sinful. That's wrong. So, you know, if you don't shape up, you're going to hell. So you got to get your shit together. You have to do it. It's not a question. What, do you want to be in hell forever? Is that what you want? You want to be in hell forever? What, are you crazy? No, you got to atone for what you did. You got to atone for it. The way you atone for it is you do this attack. You're going to live in infinite pleasure from now until the end of time. Infinite pleasure for infinity. You're going to get your virgins. You know, you're going to get, nobody could understand the joy and peace and tranquility that you're going to experience, but you just have to do this one thing to atone for all the wrong that you did. You got to do the attack. This is a classic profile, according to counterterrorism experts, on how people radicalize and end up doing religious violence, terroristic violence. And by the way, this isn't, it just so happens more often today in Islam. But this is the case. This is just a religious profile in general for terrorism. So it's not inconceivable that, you know, in the examples of abortion clinic bombings, it's the same kind of thing. You take somebody who's kind of off their rocker, kind of off mentally, a little naive, a little bit of a follower, maybe a dash of sociopathy or psychopathy. You take that person, they did a whole bunch of bad shit in their past. You tell them, oh, that's horrible, you poor, poor thing. But you can save yourself. You can save yourself if you just get on the right path. The right path is you accepting the one true God, which is, of course, my God and my interpretation of that God, and oh, yeah, you just got to do this one thing. Avenge the babies. Here's a gun. And then everything will be hunky-dory. So this is a common profile that we see. And as a final curveball to throw at you, reporting today right before I came on air, guess what? Just like Omar Mateen, remember the guy who shot up the Orlando nightclub, killed over 50 gay people? Just like him, this guy was in the closet. He was gay. He was dating a 73-year-old man. And they got this all from cell phone records and that stuff. So that, and that, again, is the, how many times have we seen this, man? It's not that everybody, like all the people who are homophobes are by definition gay. No. It's more like the people who are really, really vehement in their homophobia and who, like, outwardly denounce it all the time. Those are the people who are having an internal struggle where they themselves are gay and they don't know how to reconcile this belief system, which they actually come to believe, which is, my religion is true, God hates this, I don't know, he hates me. They have a hard time reconciling their sexuality and who they are with the fact that they believe, based on their religion, that it's immoral. So how do you act? How do you react to that? Oftentimes you let, in Omar Mateen's case, kill gay people. Kill them. Because, hey, my dad indoctrinated me, telling me this is wrong, this is evil, this is immoral. I'm attracted to it. I am gay. I don't know. My dad's got to be right. Ah, religion, yeah. So you, it's a mix of the toxic ideology of fundamentalist religion and self-hatred and not being able to come to terms with who you are. So that appears to be what happened in this case in Nice, France. And, man, it is disgusting. It is grotesque. It is sad. So many victims. So many victims. And how does one recover from that? How do you look at that and, you know, try to find a way to prevent it in the future? There are no easy answers here, man. Like, it's not like, like a lot of people on the right, they immediately go to, restrict civil liberties of the people I don't like. Yeah, okay, so then first of all, you're proving you really don't believe in the Constitution. Well, obviously this is in France, so that's a separate conversation. But in the U.S., like Newt Gingrich was like, ask Muslims if they believe Sharia and then ship them out. Like, you can't, like, it's not a thing you could do. And by the way, even if they believe in it and you ask them, they'll just be like, no, I don't believe in it. And then furthermore, the idea, oh, Sharia, bad, bad, bad. No, but if you talk to Ahmadi Muslims, like, they don't believe the literalist interpretation of Sharia with all the kill gays, do this, do that. No, they're like, no, our interpretation is you be kind, and you can't do thought crimes, man. like, what are you going to do? Okay, well, then that's, the door's open now, so now you go talk to all the KKK people. If they're a white supremacist, I'm going to ship you out. No, the whole idea of freedom of speech is, and freedom of expression is, and freedom of thought is, you know, no matter how grotesque the ideas are, if you don't actually act on them and do a crime, I can't do anything for you because that's freedom. You know, I defended the KKK doing a march through a black town because that's the side the ACLU was on, because they said, we hate them, but they have a right to do it. It's free speech. They're not doing violence. Well, by the same token, as much as I despise fundamentalist Islam and Christianity and all this, they have a right to say the shit they say and be who they are. You can't restrict civil liberties and win this battle. It's not a winning strategy. And that also shows you you're authoritarian the second something uncomfortable happens. Well, then you're not really a civil libertarian, and you never were. So, as I said when the attack happened, I don't know what the answers are. But what we should do in a sober and reasoned way is understand the causes of it and understand what goes into making a monster like we had in Nice, France. Okay. All right, here's the deal. I haven't fucking taken a break yet. I got to take a break. I just had to get through all these big stories. Those are basically all the big breaking news stories. I did 4 stories in 56 minutes, which is terrible. Let me take a quick break. I'm going to come back, and then we're going to zip through a whole bunch of the other shit that we got to talk about, okay? Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Thank you. All right, we're back, guys. We are back. We are back. We are back. Okay, here we go. Hillary Clinton time. Hillary Clinton came out for a constitutional amendment over the weekend that addresses the issue of money in politics. Let me break this down for you here. So Huffington Post reports, Hillary Clinton announced on Saturday that she would introduce a constitutional amendment within the first 30 days of her presidency to overturn the Supreme Court's 2010 Citizens United decision. She also pledged to issue an executive order to require government contractors to disclose campaign contributions and has said she would punish the Securities and Exchange Commission to require all publicly traded companies to disclose political contributions to their stockholders. So that's it, right? Victory! Yes! Hillary Clinton has moved to the left. She came out for the number one priority of progressives, getting money out of politics. Except she didn't do that. So, a lot of you are probably like, wait, what? She said she wants to do a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. What are you talking about, Kyle? That's exactly what that means, right? Get money out of politics. That's not what that means. So, with Hillary Clinton, you have to understand, the devil is always in the details. Because when you go beneath the surface of it, you go, oh, that's what she's saying. God damn it, she's tricky. So it wasn't Citizens United that legalized money in politics. There were at least two other cases that came before it, which really started us going down this path and allowed private money into politics and made it so that our politicians can be corrupted. So you had the Bilotti case. It was the Bank of Boston, I think, versus Bilotti, and you had Buckley versus Vallejo, and these cases were really the beginning of allowing money in politics, and once those cases happened, we were already fucked, because you already had private money in politics, you already had basically a system of legalized bribery. Citizens United shot a dead horse. So all you did was you took away some more of the caps for certain political players, I believe nonprofits, and that made it worse. That made the money in politics situation worse. But that if you overturn that case, you still have deep corruption. It's not like before 2010, everything was hunky-dory. No, in 05, 06, incredibly shitty and incredibly corrupt. In fucking 1988, incredibly corrupt. It all started, I believe, in 76 or 78 was when the first case happened. You go before then, you really do have a system where money in politics is regulated enough where it's not like we have an open system of legal bribery. Post the late 1970s, you have an open system of legalized bribery. So overturning one of the cases does dick. So overturning – it's like, for example, if she came out and said, we're going to overturn McCutcheon. We're going to overturn McCutcheon. McCutcheon was the most recent money in politics case. Yeah, you overturn McCutcheon, you still have Citizens United. That hasn't been overturned. You still have Buckley versus Vallejo, and you still have Bilotti. So that's not – you're not saying anything. So what's her real position? It's so sad because – this is like nothing. Her real position is, and she explains it in the later point here, in the point they make in the article. I just want more transparency. So, okay, on the edges you can regulate money in politics. I don't want unlimited money in politics. Maybe we go back to, you know, $100,000 cap or so per person, per corporation, whatever the case is. So you can have some caps, make sure they're really high. But you know what? The American people deserve to know who are buying their politicians. So that's why every time Hillary Clinton in the debate says on this issue against Bernie Sanders, what did she say? She would say, I agree with Senator Sanders. We need to get unaccountable dark money out of politics. Wait, hold on now. Why did you say unaccountable and dark before money? Bernie's like, let's get money out of politics. She's like, right, we need to get unaccountable dark money. Whoa. Why are you slipping in those words? Why are you slipping in dark and unaccountable? Why are you doing that? Because that's what she means. She means, I want to have more transparency. I want the American people to know exactly who is buying their politicians in every case. So thank you. Thank you for letting us know who has bought our democracy and who are our corporate overlords. And who are the official oligarchs in the system. Hillary, that's nothing, and you know that's nothing. But she, if you say it the right way, it sounds like it's something, doesn't it? I'm for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. To a lot of people who don't know this issue very well, they hear that and they just think, oh, she's for a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics. No. And this is the trick that the Democrats tried recently. So they see the national movements, man. They see, you know, Move to Amend, Represent.us, Wolfpack. They see all of them, and they're gaining steam. So what did the Democrats recently do? They did this kabuki show where they were like, we are going to propose an amendment to get money out of politics. Here is our amendment right here. Here, this is, we should amend the Constitution. Now, the Republicans in their infinite stupidity were like, I'm against it because y'all proposed it. But what did the amendment say? That amendment said, just like Hillary, overturn Citizens United, more transparency, but also don't get money out of politics. Make it so that Congress has the ability to regulate money in politics again. Understand the distinction there. Wolfpack Amendment is get money out of politics. So no private money, clean elections by law, that'll change the legalized bribery system we have. The Democrats said, here's our proposal for a constitutional amendment on money in politics. And the amendment says, not that we are going to get money out of politics. We are going to allow Congress to, if they so choose, regulate money in politics. So give us the ability to regulate it again, because right now they can't regulate it because the Supreme Court ruled it's a constitutional right to have money in politics because money equals free speech. The Democrats are like, no, 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 that's wrong. Let us regulate it again. Not let's actually do it. Give us the ability to regulate it again, because what would happen on day one? Even if they wanted to get something through and they have the ability to regulate money in politics again, it ain't going to get through. It's not going to get through because they're a majority Republicans now that would block it. But even when it's a majority Democrats, do you trust them to, oh, let me get – let's vote money out of our own pocket and decide to get money out of the system? I don't fucking trust them. They would never go all the way and do clean elections. The devil's always in the details. Hillary Clinton is not for Wolfpack. She's not for actually getting money out of politics and having clean elections. She's for these bullshit half measures. And honestly, in this case, it's a quarter measure at where you address the problem in name, but nothing really changes. And by the way, that's why this is actually more insidious and worse than the Republicans, who are open and honest about the fact that they want more money in politics and they don't give a fuck. Because with the Democrats, what can happen? What has the potential to happen if this succeeds? You get this 25% change, which just adds, transparency and allows Democrats to regulate it, but they won't regulate it, right? So you do that. You get the amendment. It's a bad amendment, and you just kneecap the movement. So now people wrongly might assume, well, we got it done, right? And then everybody goes home. But you didn't get it done. We still have a fucking oligarchy, and we still have corporations and billionaires controlling the system. So this is actually, in many respects, worse than the Republicans. Scary to think about, man. Here's your fucking Democratic candidate. It's pathetic. Okay. I got more for you. Mike Pence, let's do it. Mike Pence, Donald Trump's VP pick, had a epic disaster of a start to his political career. This is amazing. So Washington Post reports on this. Campaign finance records from the 1990 effort, then 31 years old, had been using political donations to pay the mortgage on his house, his personal credit card bill, groceries, and here's my favorite, golf tournament fees, and car payments for his wife. The spending had not been illegal at the time, but it stunned voters and undermined Pence's strategy to portray the incumbent representative, Philip R. Sharp, as tainted by donations from special interest political action committees. Okay, see, this is why this Trump probably picked this guy. He's like, oh, he's like me. Trump has built his whole campaign, the whole primary, everything. Ah, puppets, they're bought by the donors, this person, that person. And I give him credit for using that rhetoric because it raises attention for the biggest problem in American politics, which is money in politics, which affects all other issues. So I give him credit for the rhetoric, to be clear. But he is a liar. He is raising big money. Now, a lot of big money donors hate him, and they don't know if they can control him, so they haven't been donating to him. But he does take big money donors. He takes money directly from one billionaire who was funding Jeb Bush's campaign. And Trump had ripped Jeb Bush for taking money from that guy, and he called him a puppet of that guy. Now that guy is leading Trump's fundraising efforts. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? There's no problem. There's no problem. So Trump is raising big money, as he says, oh, the big money's the problem. They, you know, what are you talking about? That's the big issue. This guy was doing the same thing. So he's ripping his opponent as tainted by special interest donations. Meanwhile, this jackass is raising money, getting political donations, and using it on personal shit. I'm going to pay my mortgage. I'm going to pay for golf fees. I'm going to, you know, do payments for my wife, car payments for my wife, pay for groceries. And I love how they said it wasn't illegal at the time. I mean, this isn't the fucking Stone Age. What are you talking about? That's insanity. Like, usually the political corruption works where when you get an office, you do favors for the people who gave you the campaign contributions. This guy just took the money and put it in his bank account. That's definitely illegal, especially because if you tell people, hey, I want your political donations, I'm running for X, Y, or Z, it's fraud if you don't spend it on X, Y, or Z. You can't say, oh, I'm going to use this for my campaign, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're playing 18 holes at Pebble Beach in California. So you can't do that, but they're like, no, it's technically illegal. I mean, I'm sorry, technically legal. What the fuck is that about? So, guys, make no mistake about it. Like, I just did a segment ripping Hillary Clinton for being a hypocrite on Money in Politics and pretending like she wants to get money out of politics, but the amendment doesn't do that. It just adds transparency so we know who's buying our elections. So I despise Hillary on this front. Don't think the Republicans are any better. They're not. I mean, they've been the biggest beneficiaries of Money in Politics this whole time. I have this little saying I use where, I don't know if it's a saying, but I say Republicans are 100% corrupt and Democrats are like 80% corrupt. Yeah, I still think that's largely true. Hillary Clinton might be on the more corrupt spectrum of the Democrats, but as a general rule, the Republican Party, they're more corrupt. They are an arm of corporate America. That's it. Their whole thing is to represent corporate America and every once in a while throw some crazy draconian Christian conservative social policy shit out there. That's it. So, and Mike Pence is a great example of that, man. You know, he doesn't believe in climate change, doesn't believe in evolution, was a cigarette truther. He didn't think smoking kills. Just a stupid person. And look at how the first time he ran, this is what he did. And by the way, later on, he went on an actual apology tour. You know how they rip Obama, oh, apology tour, apology. No, he did the apology tour. He actually went around the state and said, I was a naive kid. I didn't know what I was doing. Could you imagine, like, what a stupid defense. I didn't know that I was supposed to take political donations and not put it towards my personal shit. Are you stupid? Like, really? You didn't know that? So there you go, man. Trump kneecapped every decent thing about his rhetoric by picking this guy. Trump sometimes does great rhetoric against the Iraq War. He does great rhetoric against TPP. He does great rhetoric against money and politics. This guy's for TPP, was one of the biggest cheerleaders of the Iraq War, and obviously this is how he feels about money and politics. So it was a terrible pick from Donald Trump. Okay. All right, I got to try to work. I got to try to rework the stories here so I can get as many in as possible, because there ain't no way I'm getting through all this shit. Let me go to this really sad story coming out of Pakistan. This is actually big news. This, you could throw this in the whole breaking news category thing. Danny model and social media celebrity was murdered in an honor killing over the weekend. Time.com explains here. Kandil Balak was strangled to death by her brother in an apparent honor killing. According to the police, parents told investigators that one of her brothers strangled her while she slept at the family's home. She had argued with her brother Wasim earlier that day over money issues and provocative photos she had posted. Balak, whose real name was Fawzia Azim, was known for being a social media celebrity who challenged conservative norms. She drew criticism recently when she posted photos of herself with a Muslim cleric. They drank soda and smoked cigarettes during Ramadan's daylight hours, which is a no-no for the fundamentalists. The pictures led the cleric, Mufti Kavi, to be removed from his position on a Ramadan committee. Balak sought protection earlier this month after receiving anonymous death threats. And then her brother went on to kill her. People actually referred to her as the Pakistani Kim Kardashian. So this is like the level of social media celebrity that she was in that context and in that country. And again, she's dead now. So right before I came on air, there was some more breaking news in relation to this story. Her brother said that he was, quote, proud to kill her. Dude, he did it because the pictures were provocative on social media. And they were arguing over money, probably because she's, I mean, I don't know all the details, but she was probably making money because of her social media platforms and whatever, you know, way she set it up, however she got a revenue stream. He probably didn't like that. And, I mean, he didn't like the provocative pictures. I mean, God forbid you drink a soda and smoke a cigarette during Ramadan. Beyond unacceptable. And yes, we can call it what it is. It is a cultural problem. You know, honor killings, they go on to say in the article here that there's hundreds of honor killings every year in Pakistan. So in Pakistan, there really is a brutal mix of fundamentalist Islam, but also just old school tribal culture. And you can argue how much those are intertwined, and they're probably very intertwined. But in the more rural areas, it's just old school misogyny, you know, just tribal culture and fundamentalist Islam. And you put that together and you try to drop somebody who's like acts like a modern secular liberal in that context, you're putting your fucking life in danger, man. A lot of people in the Western context, you might not realize it, but like, there are places in the world you can't just be like, I'm an atheist, or I don't believe your bullshit fairy tales in your religion. There are places around the world where you do so much as take a picture that some think are provocative, and they're gonna kill you. Could you imagine, I mean, stop and think about it. Could you imagine how much earlier this would have happened if it wasn't just something like I'm drinking a soda on Ramadan, or I'm smoking a cigarette, if it was like what Kim Kardashian actually does here. Hey, look at my ass. Okay, that's not equal. That value system, and look, I don't know how many cultural relativists are actually out there. I really don't think it's as much as maybe a lot of people think it is. But for anybody who would make the argument like, oh, it's all equal and the way they do it is just different. No, you can make value judgments and say that one in a certain area is superior. Yes. Yes, in a social context, when it comes to individual autonomy and liberty and freedom, yes, Western societies domestically are far superior. It is better to live in a society that allows somebody to go on social media and act like a jackass, and by the way, I don't even think she did, but it's better to live in that society than live in a society where people then decide, I'm going to kill you because I disagree, and then they claim the moral high ground. God, that pisses me off. It pisses me off because it always gets put back on the woman. So this guy's like, no, I am your family member. I am above you. I am greater than you because I'm a male and my religion and my culture tells me this is okay. So now I will kill you because you besmirched my great honor. No, you know what besmirched your honor? When you fucking killed her. That's what besmirched your honor. Like they haven't connected these dots yet. Like, hold on now. Maybe the more immoral thing is not the picture. Maybe it's more immoral to kill somebody over a picture. If you haven't thought that through, you can't do basic introspection. And you can't, for a split second, try to view yourself critically. You think you're right by definition, and everybody else is wrong, and I get to kill you if I disagree with you. Oh my God, you hurt my honor. No, if you're a murderer, you hurt your own fucking honor. Murder is the problem. Violence is the problem. You do murder and you do violence and you go, what do you mean? There's no problem here. I'm upholding my honor. No. There's nothing immoral or unethical or wrong or evil about taking fucking pictures, even if they're risque pictures. There's nothing wrong with that. And if you think there's something wrong with that, there's something wrong with you. If you live in a context in a society where people just kill people because they disagree over money or you disagree over the way they look or you disagree because, oh my God, you dared to do something I don't approve of on this holiday, which is so great to me, it doesn't fucking matter how you view it. You know how you know what you could do with your own religion? You live by it yourself. The second you start infringing on other people's rights, Well, you're infringing on their rights and their individual freedom and their liberty. What if somebody came up and killed you and said, well, my religion told me I had to do it? You wouldn't accept that. You would say, what do you, but this is my life. Exactly. So you don't have religious freedom or social or cultural freedom to take away other people's rights. And when you murder somebody and you think you're upholding your honor and you're being the most moral, no, you're immoral. You're the fucking problem. Look in the mirror. The rest of society should have caught up to Kandil Balak, because all she's doing is living her life. She's doing her. Hey, I'm going to take some pictures on social media. I'm going to question these jackasses who make decisions about my life and my body. You know, I'm going to rock the boat a little bit here because I actually believe in individual autonomy and freedom. You said fuck your individual autonomy, fuck your freedom. I'm going to kill you because that's moral. No, she's moral, you're immoral, and there needs to be justice in this case, but I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical because we covered a story recently in Pakistan. There was a politician who stood up for the right of somebody to blaspheme. Didn't even say, hey, I agree with it. Just said, look, I may not even agree with it, but they have a right to speak up against religion if they want to. A Pakistani politician said that, so somebody murdered that politician. The person who murdered the politician got a hero's funeral. We covered the story on the show. Over 100,000 people showed up to that funeral because they thought, oh, this guy was so moral and so pious. No, that's not moral. That's not pious. That's immoral. That's injustice. And if your moral compass is so beyond fucked up that you flip the situation on its head in terms of the ethics of it and the morality of it, then at this point, there may not be fucking hope for you. Because that's so far gone for the year 2016, and you have no idea. They have no idea. Like, what do you mean? This is the way it works. No, no. That's the way it worked in the year 7. That ain't the way it works anymore, bitch. Okay? Catch up. Your values are outdated. They're primitive. They're stupid. They're dumb. I am judging you. I am judging you. And I think you're pathetically stupid. So, she's not the problem. You're the fucking problem. Okay. All right, more. Everybody who listens to the show knows how much I despise Hillary Clinton. Well, I can tell you for sure that I do not despise her as much as the far right does. So listen to this. Michael Folk, a Republican state representative in West Virginia, called for Hillary to be executed over her use of a private email server as Secretary of State. So according to Talking Points Memo and the West Virginia Gazette, he said this, quote, Hillary Clinton should be tried for treason, murder, and crimes against the U.S. Constitution, then hung on the mall in Washington, D.C. All right, reel it in, tough guy. Reel it in. Okay, so this is like oftentimes when we do segments on Hillary Clinton, I'll go after her ruthlessly and viciously. But every now and then I throw in this important caveat and this important hedge that you need to make a distinction when talking about Hillary Clinton. And that is, what is a genuine, legitimate, rational, intelligent criticism of her versus what is foaming at the mouth, backwards, right-wing bullshit arguments against her? And understand that throughout the course of her career and Bill's career, there has been a plethora of just absolute horseshit critiques of them. So it shouldn't be that in your disdain for Hillary, you're willing to accept that, therefore, any argument against her is legitimate because I don't like her. No, you have to be willing to distinguish and say, well, that one makes no sense, and that one makes sense. So when we talk about money in politics and how corrupt she is, it makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. When some people talk about, oh, well, maybe she did murder, don't be stupid. Now you're just being stupid, okay? So, and look at this idiot. She should be executed because she used the private email server. It's treason, murder, and crimes against the U.S. Constitution. Are you fucking kidding? So you want to talk about crimes against the U.S. Constitution, you're not calling for George W. Bush and Dick Cheney to be killed. You do realize that they shredded the Constitution. No more due process. No more habeas corpus. No more protection from unreasonable search and seizure. I mean, they set up a fucking worldwide torture regime. They set up an extrajudicial prison in Cuba. You're going to fucking sit there and talk about, oh, Hillary Clinton with emails, 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 emails. No, you're just a tribal idiot playing for a fucking team. And understand something. I did the segment on the emails. You guys fucking saw it. You go back and watch it right now. What did I say? I said if anybody else did what she did, there would have been an indictment. And they probably would have been found guilty. I think there should be an indictment. And she probably should be found guilty. We know what she did. They admitted. The head of the FBI, James Comey, was like, yeah, she broke this law, this law, this law, this law, this law. She lied about this, 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 this. But what am I going to do? What am I going to do? No reasonable person would bring the case. No, you would bring the case. And he was so obsessed with intent. Oh, my God. She's not a Russian spy. Therefore, we're not going to go after her. Well, fucking Edward Snowden, his intent was crystal clear. He said, I am doing this because the government is violating the Constitution. They're like, intent. Exile that motherfucker. Chelsea Manning. Release stuff to let us know your military is killing civilians, America. Wake up. They go, intent. Fuck your intent. Get in the jail cell. Hillary Clinton, oh, my God, her intent is so important. Tell me about how much of a victim she is because she's not a Russian spy. So these were just, whoops, little mistakes with the fucking email. So, yes, there should have been consequences. But fucking killing her? No. Now you're going to make me defend her because you're such a fucking idiot and you're so blind with rage that I need to come out here and tell you to pump your fucking brakes. Fucking kill her over emails. Literally nobody on the left would agree to that. Nobody on the left. Why? Because they're smart. Their criticisms of Hillary make sense. Yours, on the other hand, are mind-numbingly stupid. All right, let me squeeze in one more and then we're donezo. I wish I could do more stories, but I'm out of time, bitch. Going to be out of time very soon. We have a particularly pathetic story coming out of Egypt this week. RT explains, one of Egypt's most influential religious bodies is unimpressed by the hugely popular Pokemon Go mobile phone game. The deputy chief of the Al-Azhar Islamic Institution issued a fatwa against the game. He said it's, quote, harmful mania. This game makes people look like drunkards in the streets and on the roads while their eyes are glued to the mobile screens leading them to the location of the imaginary Pokemon in the hopes of catching it. Will we find some lunatics walk into mosques, churches, prisons, and military units in search of the missing Pokemon? Will people neglect their work and earning their living and devote themselves instead to hunting for Pokemon? Reel it in, Grandpa. Reel it in. Pump your brakes, bitch. Pump them good. Look at these people, man. Look, this is what happens when you have, like, the old-school religious bodies where it's old men who have just been dictating shit and asserting shit for as long as they can remember. This is the shit they end up saying. Mrr, get off my lawn! I don't like the Pokemon monsters. I'm issuing a fatwa against them because I don't like them. You know what this reminds me of? In Saudi Arabia, the top religious authority also issued a fatwa against Pokemon. He did it against chess, too. He does it against everything. Anything he doesn't like. Seriously. He's like, I don't like this. For chess, he had such an awesome quote on it. He said something like, I'm against it because it is a waste of time. Motherfucker, just because you think it's a waste of time doesn't mean it is objectively a waste of time and nobody likes it, nobody enjoys it, nobody gets something out of it. There are a lot of people who do. Obviously. But when you're an old fuck out of touch and you're brainwashed with religion and you've been up your own ass for all these years, what do? Just anything you don't like. I decree against this. I decree against that. And then at the end of the day, they think you're crazy if you don't go along with it. They're like, did you not hear me? I said I issued a fatwa against this. Yeah. We don't give a fuck. The game is fun. You're not. You're an idiot who makes shit up. Piss off. If you can't tell, I'm tired of religious bodies dictating people's lives, whether it's in the Muslim world, whether it's in this context, and granted the religious bodies here have, thankfully, much less authority than in, say, Saudi Arabia. But I'm so sick of it, man. I'm so sick of it. No, I don't hate all religious people. There are many, many, many good religious people. There are many people who use their religion for good. They cherry pick the good parts, or they just blow off the bad parts, whatever. I love all those people. The people who get under my skin more than anything else are the fundamentalists. The ones who really believe it, or they just cherry-pick the bad parts and they use religion to push a conservative political ideology. And the end game is what? The end game is this kind of lunacy. Just absolute lunacy. I don't like Pokemon. I don't like Yu-Gi-Oh. I don't like chess. I don't like fucking Harry Potter. I don't like this. I don't like that. Nobody gives a fuck, old man. Nobody gives a fuck. Piss off and let people live. It's called freedom and liberty. Look into it. All right, I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Mwah! Peace.